Welcome to What's Your Story Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Story. On this pod, I sit down with people of color leaders to understand how they've been able to use their superpowers to make an impact on our world. And I do it one story at a time. Okay, my guest on the pod this week is a former executive from Gucci and Sony BMG Music, and he's now building the nation's largest gaming content studio. So I'm excited to hear about that shift and what he's up to now. But I'd like to welcome Dante Simpson to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining. I appreciate you taking the time as well. So before we get into learning about your journey and all the great things you're up to, can you share a little bit about your story and background and maybe give us a glimpse into what little Dante may have been like?
Oh, wow. Little Dante. That is a great question, but a complex one nonetheless. So let me give you both sides of the dichotomy of Dante, whether it's the kid that was bullied or the kid that went on to become a state wrestling champion and a standout football player, whether it was the kid who was explained or who wasn't really explained the power of passion, but more so to follow your talent. I found that that has not worked best for me in life. Following the passion has always, you know, worked great for me, but I was always taught to follow the talent. A kid that was a good speaker in front of large crowds. So my life and upbringing was in the church, Wednesday church, Saturday youth group, Sunday church. So, you know, there was this time where it's like, hey, he's a good speaker. He's always in the church. That's what he knows. There was a moment that I wanted to become a minister. I wanted to become a pastor. So, you know, what happens in early teens when a kid wants to become a pastor, but has that may not actually be his passion, you know, to the kid growing up that was good with numbers. So, you know, my parents are like, hey, accounting is your path. You're good with numbers. No offense to any of the accountants out there. It just was not for me. So just being that numbers kid and kind of trying to take that further in life just wasn't my, that wasn't the journey that I was destined to be on. So, but through it all, I'm always happy to say that I come from a household of love. Two high school sweethearts that I affectionately call mom and dad. And you know, that's one of the things that I'm most proud of, you know, coming from a space of stability. It's helped me so much today. I carry that into my life. You know, what does stability, what does consistency look like in a world of chaos? You know what I mean? So, you know, born in Rochester, New York, where the snow was high in the 70s, and raised in Atlanta, where they never saw snow. So, you know, just kind of living both of those existences in different cultures and different spaces and absolutely loving both. And I feel like I am somewhere between in Rochester, they call it the Rock. So I'm somewhere between the Rock and the ATL. So that's me, minus the accent. So gotcha. Kind of growing up around love and my little brother and sister following me everywhere that I went. And it still feels like that's the case to this day. But nonetheless, that's me. That's little Dante in a nutshell, both sides of the equation. And I still carry a lot of that with me today.
Yeah, that's great. One, it's amazing to hear how your community kind of develop that foundation for you. But I'm curious, what did you see as like your path? Like you mentioned, you know, maybe you want to be a pastor, parents saying accounting, but what did you see as your path? You mentioned also playing sports, but like where and how did you see your path kind of placing out in front of you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I didn't know. You know what I mean? And that's one of the things that I say to kids all the time. It's okay not to know. Just take a step and, you know, keep going, keep walking. Did I want to be the firefighter? Yeah. Did I want to be, you know, in the NFL? Yeah. I wanted all of those things, you know, but it's very interesting when you're younger and you don't actually apply yourself. and that was me. And my parents would say, wow, you skate by, you still get B's, you still get A's, but you're not actually applying yourself. So I did not know what the future held for me. I just lived in the moment. But my parents always warned me that that would catch up. You know what I mean? And trust me, it did. You know what I mean? So as I mentioned, that accounting path, as you just brought up, I followed the motto of Martin Luther King, actually. And, you know, he kind of said, and I'm going to abbreviate it. He said, if you're a street sweeper, you know, be the Michelangelo of street sweepers or the Beethoven as Beethoven composed music. And I was just like, all right, I'm going to do that with accounting. Like, I'm going to be the best that there is. I'm looking to go that route. But when you don't have the passion and when it doesn't match, you know, it's sometimes it's hard to find that path. So I would say that it was not until I started my corporate journey that I actually knew what I wanted to do. And I think that I learned that because I knew what I didn't want to do. You know what I mean? So I learned what I loved by actually identifying what I hated. So, it you know, some may say that it's a backwards path, but I think that, you know, the process of elimination is a real thing. and that was my journey. It was not the following of love. It was not the following of passion. It was none of that. It was, I hate this. I mean, like, this is not where I'm supposed to be. This is not, you know, as they say, my happy place. This is not where my joy is. This is not where any of this is. And I'll hopefully be able to circle back on this and bring this up to you later. But I do feel like when you find joy and when you find happiness and when you find the application of things that you've learned in your path, that's when you found your destination. And that's when you can start to live in your destiny. So I think that it was not a scenario of knowing early. It was definitely knowing late and being able to identify and embrace it. So my early dreams were just to wake up tomorrow and go hang out with the guys. You know what I mean? Like, hey, we're going to school. I can't wait for gym class. You know, it was like, that was the early dream. You know, gym class was a great time, now that I'm thinking back to it. But nonetheless, it was, you know, it's being able to say, okay, I'm living in the moment. And there's nothing wrong with that either. You know what I mean? And a lot of folks will try to make you feel like, hey, if you don't have this map planned out at the age of 12, 13, 15, 17, 22, you know what I mean? You're a failure. And I just don't believe that. I just believe just keep walking. It will reveal itself to you. And that is the greatest joy ever when your destiny and path reveals itself to you.
Yeah, it was powerful. There's two things that you said I think are really powerful for people to take away. One is this idea of kind of sitting at the selection point of choosing an ice cream and you tasting as many as possible to figure out, okay, I don't like this. I kind of like this. I really love this. And taking that time to really sample experiences and opportunities and not feel that, to your point, that you're forced to just pick at 12 years old, I'm going to do this and stick to that plan. I think that's important. And then the other thing, and I, as you mentioned, as you talk to younger people, I always try to tell people that there's this shock when you hit 22, 24, 25, where the roadmap becomes undefined. Because up until there, everyone tells you what you're supposed to do. Oh, you're supposed to go to school. Why do you go to school? To get into a good high school. Okay, why do you get into a good high school? To get into a good college. Why do you get into a good college? To get a job. And then that's where the plan stops. and people don't really tell you after that, you know, besides some, you know, parental pushes to have kids and married and that kind of thing, but no one really maps it out for you. And I think if you are so bought into like, okay, I've got to figure this out, you miss out on those other opportunities to find that passion and that joy. And so you mentioned finding that in your corporate journey and when it started, but I want to go a little bit back. And you actually attended Ohio State University, or the Ohio State University.
Yes, thank you very much.
Got it right. And you play football. So I'm curious, how did that prepare you for your journey and give you that added experience, confidence, all those things?
Oh, wow. Wow, the lessons that I learned on High Street. And if you're from Columbus, you know exactly what that means. They, you know, it's funny. Ohio State didn't prepare me for my corporate journey. Ohio State prepared me for life. I'm one of those kids who had never been away from home outside of summer camps and things of that nature. And I'm an absolute diehard Buckeye. I am a diehard OH. And I know everybody out there from Ohio is screaming IO, and I love you for it. You know, I always say that I'm a son of Ohio, even though I wasn't raised there or anything of that nature. But with regards to my career journey, there's always been a lot of ups and downs, a lot of pressures and joys. And that also goes with being an athlete, especially an athlete at a top tier university. So being able to be prepared for all of that, you know, but I tell folks all the time, the most invaluable lesson didn't come on the field at all. They came in the moments where no one was watching. And that still applies to my life today, you know, but, you know, going back to the Ohio State days, you know, the weight room, the study sessions, when we were on the planes, when we were on the buses, you know, the moments with your teammates. And you hear a lot of folks in the NFL that have retired often mention, you know, hey, I don't necessarily miss the game. I miss the guys. I miss the moments, because I don't have moments like that in my life. But I didn't realize when it was going on and when it was going down that those were some of the greatest moments of my life. You know, the moments where your teammates become family, you know, people from such diverse backgrounds. Listen, you know, my first roommate who was a teammate, his name was Skip, and he didn't have a toothpick. He had straw. Literally, he had straw, and that's kind of how he walked around as a dude coming up from Atlanta. That was wild to me. I'm like, okay, you know, he's from Westerville, Ohio. Skip, if you're out there, man, we had some times, man. It was amazing. But, you know, it's just those moments are crazy. You know, game day is the reward, you know, for the hard work. And that's my mentality today, you know, within my career, you know, spending this time right now with you, you know, kind of telling my story, you know, talking to Matt and, you know, sharing all this stuff. This is the reward for the hard work. You know, I chose personally not to fall in love with the accolades, but rather fall in love with the journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that when you fall in love with the journey, then the hard days become easy because you understand that there's a lesson. And I just had a conversation yesterday, and I'll share this with you. We often say, you know, folks will be in school and they'll say, hey, why did I learn this? Why did I learn that pi is 3.14? I never use that. Why did I learn E equals MC squared? I never use that. I never, ever use it. And I always say, and if there's anything that I can leave folks with today, I hope that it's this. Life is about perspective. So you may say that you never used E equals MC squared, but you remembered it. You retained it. That was the lesson. The lesson throughout your career is, what do you retain in your early positions when you weren't a manager, when you weren't a director, when you weren't a VP, when you weren't a CEO, to understand that feeling of being the associate and then take that into your CEO experiences. That's the lesson of E equals MC squared. You may not use it, but the retention of that information to be able to recall it and be able to discuss it in conversation is the lesson. So I just brought it up to you. So I can never say, hey, I never use E equals MC squared. Yeah. I'm on with Matt Story today using E equals MC squared. So it's like, you know, you can never say that you don't use these things and be able to retain them, because they're woven into you for a reason that can inspire someone else to say, wow, I never looked at it that way. I'll never say that I never use this again, because actually I remember it. And the fact that I remember it is the use of it. I'm an old guy. And I joke with my friends all the time. I say, hey, listen, if you come from a certain era, I don't care if you're from Rochester, Atlanta, Wyoming, or Hawaii. If you come from a certain era and you're a certain age, you remember that your bologna has a first name and you know exactly what it is. And you remember that it has a second name and you know exactly what it is. Yeah. Now, if you're young and you're hearing this, you're like, I don't even eat bologna. I've never seen bologna. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. But if you're from a certain era, it's woven into your life. So you may not eat it anymore today, but you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. And it's funny because when I said it, Matt, you smiled. know exactly what I'm talking about. And it's, you know, so that's the thing that's funny. And I always say that, listen, we are all connected. You know what I mean? We all have connected experiences, whether we realize it or not. And we choose, you know, don't embrace your difference in the corporate spaces. Embrace your shared experiences and build from that. And we were able to do that at Ohio State, whether it was me with Skip and him listening to, you know, Def Leppard and Iron Maiden every day, or it was me listening to Outkast and the Dungeon Family. You know, we found the commonality, and the commonality happened to be Ohio State and football. And I still find the commonality with folks today. And that's what I took away, and that's what I take, and that's what I love about Columbus. That's what I love about Ohio. And I'll be there and periodically and still fall in love with it all over again.
Yeah. Well, you hit on something. So I read a book recently, The Extended Mind by Annie Murphy Paul. And what she touches on, there's a lot of research into, we tend to think of our mind as a muscle. And, you know, kind of similar to athletics, like we need to build this muscle, et cetera. And she actually has research that dispels that. And says that the mind isn't a muscle that you can build to be, you know, quote unquote, smarter. It's actually taking off cues of our environment. And so when you talk about the example of, like, we all had these shared experiences, you know, you and Skip, or, you know, growing up through a certain time zone, that reference that you just made is not something that was stored in my mind. But because you used artifacts to recall and to take me back to when I was a kid, it brought that memory back in a way that tapped into my extended mind. And I just think it's really interesting as we think about, you know, going forward and technology, you know, we rely on these devices and being connected to so many people that we sometimes don't take advantage of that extended mind of being able to have these moments and times where we go through things together and we, you know, think about how we can actually go above and beyond what each of us could do individually. And I recommend the book to everyone because it's just a phenomenal concept to think about. How do you work with teams? How do you work with other leaders? How do you, you know, help your, you know, future generations actually build their own intellect and whatnot. So you took me there. So I wanted to recommend that.
I love it. I love it. You momentarily gave me a flashback of the movie Limitless. You know what I mean? And kind of having these recollections that are stored and actually bringing them out, you know, when motivated, when inspired to bring them out. So yeah, exactly. I can relate at least through the movie, not necessarily, but I have to look up that book. I definitely have to look it up because I love that idea and that concept.
Yeah, definitely recommend it. So I want to get into your professional journey. So you've had experience in high fashion, in music, which, you know, are kind of culture infused environments, but now you're pivoting into the gaming space. And so I'm curious, like, what is that connective thread of you that you've been able to go from these high level positions in different industries and be able to bring into this new space?
Yeah, gaming just makes sense. And I mentioned this earlier, and I'll mention it now again, but kind of add some more leaves to that tree. The lessons that I learned at the Gucci Group were amazing. The lessons that I learned with Sony BMG, though different, still amazing. The lessons that I'm learning in gaming are a culmination of all of the lessons that I learned previously. That's why I believe I found my destiny, because it's a piece of everything that I've done previously. So to give you an example, in gaming, there's a lot of culture experience needed from the fashion space. Mm-hmm. Very fortunate. Love the folks over at the Clio Awards, for example. We won our first one this year, you know, so we were ecstatic. We were on cloud nine. We won our first Grand Clio, and it was for the metaverse, and it was for Fortnite and Balenciaga in the metaverse. The development of that, the production of that. You mentioned cultures, the fashion culture, the music culture, obviously gaming itself is a culture. To be able to collab cultures is what gaming has allowed, whether it's the sports cultures, you know, definitive sports, you know, you can name them your favorites. They likely are engaging with gaming because of the age of the audience, because of the engageability of the audience, because of the connectivity of the audience, and most importantly, because of the communities that exist within gaming spaces. So when people hear gaming and gaming culture, they instantly think video games, but it's so much more. Gaming culture is fashion. Gaming culture is arts. It's tech cultures. It's music. It's sneakerheads. You know, it's truly a mix of all cultural forms. So the progression for me just made sense that I was able to bring these experiences from all of these places. During the pandemic, it was very interesting. You know, we witnessed a lot of things close down. Music was non-existent, it almost felt, during the pandemic. If you weren't on social platforms engaging with music in real time, or just kind of listening to your playlist, your personal playlist, new music was non-existent. During the pandemic, we were happy to be a part of the Travis Scott Fortnite activation, which garnered over 26 million people in attendance and viewing that. And I always, just to kind of give you scale on that, if Travis Scott was to perform at Madison Square Garden, he'd probably get 50,000 people. If he did 100 shows, you'd get 5 million people. You know, we got 27 million people in 3 days. So, you know, off of the same performance, same show, you know, 7 to 9 minutes, and, you know, and there you go. You have it from there. So to kind of understand that level of engagement with this prime audience, that's where gaming really became intriguing to me. I played in the space several years ago, and this is my second foray in. And, you know, after a very successful first step and exit, you know, we're back, and we are building this studio that's built off of the inspiration of folks who want to build their own table versus asking for a seat at the table. So what does it look like when, you know, you have the opportunity to build Pixar, or you have the opportunity to build a Paramount studio, but make it gaming specific or from a gaming lens? That's been the pivot. The artistry and the beauty of fashion, the creativity and the connection and engagement of music, but being able to do that around premium content in the gaming space. We were built for that. You know, I'll be frank with you. the first person that we went out and got as we built a creative collective was Ridley Scott. So we went out and got the Ridley Scott Creative Group, and folks, you know, hopefully everybody's familiar with Ridley, but if you're not, you know, dating back to the 70s, he created Aliens, you know what I mean? The movie and the franchise, you know, moving forward, he's done so much more. My favorite movie of his is American Gangster with Denzel Washington. But, you know, a lot of, you know, he became a legend when he created Gladiators, the film. So to be able to align with folks of that ilk that have done legendary films in the past, and they become storytellers within the gaming space with gamers, sitting side by side with gamers and telling these amazing stories, we're built on that. So whether it's Web3 Metaverse, whether it's premium content on streaming channels, whether it's digital, immersive, or VR, we are all things premium content. And it's been amazing, you know, kind of building this and taking this journey.
That's great. No, I love it. I early in my career, I was thrown into the gaming world because, well, one, I was the young kid that understood it. And two, we were trying to figure out, you know, back in the 2000s, what is the role of brands in video games? And we definitely didn't have the technology that we have now, and all the extension that you mentioned of, like, this isn't just about me sitting in front of a TV playing 2K. There's an experience that happens in gaming that I'm not just gaming. I'm following, you know, the videos on YouTube. I'm you know, looking at Twitch and seeing all these, you know, amazing superstar people and seeing what they're able to do. I'm, you know, rooting for my favorite esports team and, like, in, you know, on and on and on. And so I'm curious, for those that may not be as familiar, if you could just give a little bit more on kind of what you're specifically doing and your group is doing, just to kind of frame it for them. Cause I think if you're not in the industry, a lot of the things you just ran through make sense, but you don't quite understand how it fits together.
Okay. Absolutely. So it was once said, you know, don't be all things to all people, right? Mm-hmm. But in the gaming space, that doesn't hold true. You can actually be a lot of things to a lot of different people and it still work. So I'll answer your question, but I'll segment it. We work with agencies, some of the world's biggest agencies. One of the things that we realized is within agencies, they have one Matt story, a guy who knows gaming, a gal who knows gaming. They game, but they don't have dedicated departments. So you may have one person that works with you and that's it. And now you've got to service one of the world's biggest beverage brands and there's two people. You're trying to figure it out. And then there's, you know, a bunch of other think tank individuals that aren't gamers. You know what I mean? Much like you said, hey, I know that we need to be here, but I don't get it. You know what I mean? But I know we need to be here because this is where the audience is. What do we do? Well, they call us and they say, okay, you guys have a dedicated team. You live this every day. You do this every day. We then have a collective that we bring. That collective is both influencers, streamers, folks from some of the biggest teams in the world. And we sit down with these agencies under the ESPAT Studios umbrella. And we say, okay, this is what an effective strategy looks like. Or they'll say, hey, this is what we're going to do as a commercial campaign to roll out. And we'll say, no, this doesn't work at all. You know what I mean? So I'll give you an example. I usually name the brand, but today I'm not going to name the brand because they are now friends of the program. So they've seen the error of their ways. But originally they said, hey, no, we've got it. We don't need any help. And then I'll tell you the campaign that they rolled out. They rolled out big beverage, major beverage brand. They rolled out a campaign for which gamers were gaming, and inside of the game, the characters started befriending each other. So you may know the brand, but you know, the characters started befriending each other. The gaming community went up in flames. They were furious. They were like, wait, we don't play games so that these players can love each other. Like, no, that's not what this is all about. You know, that's not what this is supposed to be. This isn't WWE. Like, you know, all of a sudden you're just changing the frame of what this is. This is a competitive landscape. We don't want them loving each other. And the campaign fell very, very flat, trending for all the wrong reasons. So what we do is we come in and have those conversations with agencies and say, no, this isn't the lexicon. This doesn't work. This is not the way to do it. And, you know, we go from there. So that's how we work with agencies. And ultimately, we work with brands. We also work with your major streaming platforms. So, hey, and I often do this, and I'll do this with you now, Matt. I always say that when Stan Lee sat down for the very first time and started sketching Spider-Man, and when he was drafting these characters under the Marvel Universe, you know, there's no way that he imagined that these things would become what they later became. And obviously being Avengers Endgame was the endgame. And, you know, he did not, there's no way that he knew that back when he started, you know, some 50 years ago. But yep, we have the advantage of knowing that. So what happens when some of these IP assets in the gaming space are first done right? You know what I mean? That's the key. And exist on, you know, feature films, streaming platforms as show assets. We just saw Netflix lose the entire catalog to Disney Plus. They took everything back and put everything on Disney Plus. You know, how do you then connect with that audience that was once that Disney Plus audience? Well, gaming is an ideal way. You know, they're taking that foray. It's a long walk, but to be able to work with these folks and create show assets, whether it's doc, you know, follow doc, actual, you know, series or feature film, we play in that space as well. And then for brands, everything digital. So oddly enough, I say, hey, metaverse is just a new word for gaming for brands. That's all that metaverse is it's just gaming for brands. That's all that they're doing. And it's like, if you look at every single ROI and KPI for the metaverse, it mimics a video game in every way. How long are they using it? What's their click-through rate? What are they doing here? Everything for a video game, that is the same metric that they use for a successful metaverse. It's going to be a process, just like video games were, but, you know, what better group to go to build out your metaverse and identify those insights than a gaming brand? Because like I said, it's only, if you go to just a design house, they're not going to understand the gaming analytics that work to make games successful. And that's what would make a metaverse successful for these brands. We just recently, a couple weeks ago, did a VR experience for Post Malone. He had an album release, and it was the first ever album release in virtual reality. 9.5 million attendees. You know what I mean? It's like those numbers are through the roof, like just totally unexpected. But we did that VR experience and it was amazing. So to be able to look at that and say, okay, now this is something new for the music industry. What did we do? We took a look at what Kanye West did with his concerts for his album release. And we say, okay, how do we take that and we trump it? We know how many, the number of people he was in front of with those concerts. How do we 10X that? Okay, this is how we can do it. We make it global. We digitize it. We do it in virtual reality. Here we go. Yeah. So that's an example of what we can do for folks, for brands. Identify ways for them to collaborate in spaces where folks are digesting this in new and original ways that become a part, that become their My Baloney Has a First Name moment. You know what I mean? Like, do you remember 30 years ago when we were watching da da da? Like, now it's normal, but back then that was amazing, you know? And to be able to be a part of, woven into somebody's life as a brand is invaluable for a brand. You know what I mean? Where 30 years later, somebody still remembers that moment. And to be able to create those moments, that's who we are.
No, it's phenomenal. And I kudos to you and your team for kind of connecting these dots in a way that very few are or can, because I think it is the you know, as a curious marketer, it is the questions we're asking every day of how do you go into these spaces. And I 100% agree. You know, back when 2000s, it was adver gaming, and then we moved into in-game placements, and you know, we the things have evolved, the technologies have evolved, obviously, but the strategies have been consistent. And I think there's a lot to be learned from the things, the programs, and as you said, the moments that you're creating, because that's what all of us want to do as marketers, is to be a part of those moments and hopefully to be invited into those moments with the consumer segment or the customer segment we're going after.
So Matt, you nailed it. And I say this to folks all the time, MTMs, create as many MTMs as you can, moments that matter. Yep. How many moments that matter can you create in a person's life? Because once you do that, you become synonymous with a person's life and a person's lifestyle. And that's where influence happens. And, you know, people use the word influencer and they don't actually understand how influencers work. You created moments that mattered for us, for a segment of people that became larger and larger, and you influenced the decisions that they were making by the decisions that you were making. And that's what, you know, success looks like in our space. How do you broaden the space, and How do you grow this audience? Most people are gamers and don't realize it, whether they're picking up their phone and just using it while they're on the, you know, in commute somewhere or at the airport, you know, or you know, they think of a certain thing when they think a gamer, but how do you connect all of those dots and just show that this gamer landscape is much larger than folks realize and create these moments across the landscape?
Yep. 100%. So I could probably spend a, you know, another hour, 2 hours just talking about that alone and content and all whatnot, but maybe we'll save some of that for a part two. Yes. I do want to switch to the brand of Dante for a bit and ask you one of my favorite questions. What would you say is your superpower?
Ooh, good question. I think that my superpower, I like to think when I look in the mirror that my superpower is the transference of energy. And I think that that can, you know, you can be a hero or a villain, you know, based on how you transfer energy. You can transfer energy for the good or the bad. You know what I mean? I'm very excited about stuff that I'm passionate about. And one of the things that I often hear when I talk to folks is, wow, I don't understand this gaming, but you are passionate about it. And, you know, I love that. And I want to align myself with folks who care this much about what they're doing. So that's something that's interesting and that I believe in. They often say in the investor world that people don't invest in your business. People invest in people. They've got to believe in you. Yep. They've got to believe that you know what you're doing, that you're both knowledgeable, that you're both passionate, that, you know, and they hold that in esteem when identifying how they're going to align their dollar, for example. And that's why I believe, and I mentioned earlier about, do you follow your talents or do you follow your passions? I believe that your talents can be groomed. Your passion is your passion. So I actually am a firm believer in following your passions because you're always going to be excited. I always heard growing up, you know, at least in my 20s, find a job that, you know, when you go in, you don't feel like you're going to work. You know what I mean? And, you know, gaming is love for me, but I'll tell you my actual passion. And this is what I learned through all of my companies. My passion is actually building. So it's not necessarily any of the industries that I've worked with. It's building within those industries and building something completely new. That's what took me forever to learn, that it wasn't about the job title. It was about the role in the company. And for every company that I had, I was a biz dev guy. So I was always a business development guy. And I learned that that was it for me. Developing business, building business to immense success was actually my passion. And it doesn't only apply to business. So whether with my friends, with my family, people I do not know, you know what I mean? Listen, I'm on What's Your Story? And as The Rock said, you know, I grew up in a wrestling household. So I'm going to kind of tease The Rock a little bit. I'm on with Matt Story and I'm talking to the millions and millions of his subscribers and his fan base. And you know what I mean? I want to see everybody win. And that's a part of when you build, you understand that true success is not only you winning, but seeing people that you won with go out and win on their own. That inspires me. You know, I've seen folks with different managerial styles, you know, micromanage and, you know, not allow folks to truly spread their wings and show their real talents. I've worked with some folks who have gone on to do amazing things. And when they call me back and they're like, Dante, I incorporate so much of what I learned with you into, you know, what I do now. And oftentimes, like a lot of little tidbits that I've said today are things that I got from my dad, right? And I believe that if I tell you something and you're like, oh, I like that line, I'm going to use that line. Yep. But if I actually got it from my dad, then that means my dad's in heaven right now, right? So my dad's looking down, my mom and dad are looking down, and it allows me to keep my dad alive because it's something that he said, that he came up with, that now Matt Story is saying, and Matt Story's audience is saying, not even knowing that it's my dad. You know what I mean? But for me, it's like that's all a part of that superpower. When I say transference of energy, we have a chance to keep the people that we love alive by telling stories that they've shared with us and hoping that they resonate and connect with other folks. And then you're sharing an energy that comes from your parent or that comes from, you know, your sibling that may no longer be here or that may be here. And it allows you to keep folks alive. So I think that that transference of energy and also being cognizant of it, You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, and understanding that, hey, you come in and you have a bad day and you start putting your bad day on everybody else. What happens to your surrounding? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know, you can become toxic in your own world without realizing it. And I choose not to go that route. Like, let's, you know, we're going to win. We're going to figure out a way to win. And you know, that's how we're going to rock and roll here today. So I think that would be my superpower, is transference of energy and understanding the implication of that. Because a lot of people don't understand it. You know what I mean? They don't understand that you come in and you're being a jerk, and then all of a sudden now the energy's all off in the room. And, you know, I've been in places where it's like, oh, the boss is here. Oh my God, everybody tighten up. Like, you know, you got to, he's here. Oh, she's here. You got to. And it's like, that's not a way to be. You know, I want to walk through and be people like, oh, Dante's here. D is here. Like, hey, what's up, man? How you doing? How's everything? You know, and that energy is the energy that I prefer, because I've been in those other environments where they always say, hey, the big boss is here. And then all of a sudden it's like everything's quiet. You can't hear anything in the building. And it's like, that is not what I want. You know what I mean? So to be able to not only identify your greatness and transfer it, but also to groom greatness in others and allow them to transfer it. And that's the model. So, yeah, so I would say that's my superpower. If I had to have one, if I had to pick one, I'd say it's that transference of energy. And Matt, I'm sticking with it.
Yep. I love everything in there, because you touched on a number of things. I think you touched on having that passion, but actually that passion turned into your purpose and why you exist in those rooms. You also talked about the legacy and the legacy of your father, the legacy of others that have poured into you, so that you can pour in other people that can pour it in, like that ripple effect of like having that impact. Because, you know, I frequently joke that Beyonce only has 24 hours in the day, and look at the impact she has. Yeah. So if I could have a little bit of that impact in my world, using those same 24 hours to influence and to use your words, transfer that energy in a positive way, it's limitless, going back to our previous conversation of what we can actually do together. So I love all of that. So I have to ask, have you had a Mama, We Made It moment?
Ooh, Mama, We Made It. I'm going to tell you, I wasn't even there for my Mama, We Made It moment. So I found out about it afterwards. And I think that it's funny. My mom worked for the post office, and she's the first woman post matron general in our county. And she did some amazing things. She was absolutely awesome. And it was funny how it played itself. She and her sisters from church were talking, and one of the ladies said, girl, I saw your son, you know, in Essence, and I saw your son here. And she didn't know. And my mom was like, I know what he does, but I don't know what he does. You know, I don't know what he's doing. I don't know, but I know his title, you know, and that's, you know, I don't know the intricacies of what he's doing and what, you know, this, that, and the other. And I worked very closely with Tom Ford, an amazing mentor to me, great guy all the way around. And to be able to see him execute his vision of starting his own brand, starting his own imprint, you know, finding his husband and everything that he found along the way, it's like, you know, good for you. You're absolutely amazing. You're a creative genius. But to be along for that journey and actually witness that journey and be a part of that as the only person in the room that was my skin complexion, you know what I mean, that sat at those tables firsthand, it was very amazing to witness. And my mom ended up finding out from one of her fashionista friends, like, girl, do you know your son is working with Tom Ford? Do you know? And she's like, Tom who? I'm like, what? And, you know, so she had no idea. It was just, so she's like, baby, who's Tom Ford? What are you doing? Like, who's these people? Yeah. Like, you know, like, you're working with celebrities? And I'm like, mom. I was like, you know, so I think that hearing her excitement, I think if I would have told her, there wouldn't have been the same level of excitement. Yeah, she would have been like, oh, that's great. I'm so proud of you. Keep doing your thing, baby. You got this. And then she would have gone back to whatever she was doing. Like, all right, whatever. Yeah. I don't know what he's even talking about. Yep, but to hear it from her circle of friends and to be able to take that moment of pride, I think was the first moment that she really got it. And when she started to see these things happening, like, oh, I was looking at this and I saw your son on the red carpet of this and that. And when she started to get that, those were the Mama, I Made It moments where, you know, she was able to say, okay, he's actually doing, he's found it. He's found what he's doing. But little did she know, I hadn't found it yet. You know what I mean? That was just all still just part of the journey. But those were the moments. And it's funny. The moments didn't come between she and I. They weren't our moments. They were her moments with her friends. And it just shows you how impactful our friend, our peer group could be on us, where, you know, her son could tell her what I'm doing. And she'd be like, that's great. I'm so proud of you. But her friends, oh, she went through the roof. All of a sudden it was, you know, the greatest thing ever. And from that moment forward, she's like, tell me everything. Because I think she didn't want to be in these circles and not understand what it meant. No. So, you know, then she became inspired to know more about what I was doing. And that was the moment, to be honest with you. That was the, oh, you love this now. Okay, your girls are telling you this is a big deal. So it's a big deal. You know, so it was just funny being able to turn that around on my mom. Just in life, she was always, you know, be the leader, be the leader, be the leader. It's like, oh, so you're following your friends now, are you? So your friend jumps off the bridge, are you going to jump off too? You want to know now, don't you? So that was just very fun to be able to share that with her and for her to see it and understand it and more so hear it from her group. And not just for me. So that was my moment. That moment I got off the phone and I smiled and I said, okay, it just happened. Mom finally got on board with what I'm doing. And this is great. She gets to, you know, kind of celebrate it and be a part of it. So that was great.
That's beautiful. What I love about that is you talked about there being a fashion culture, there being a music culture, gaming culture. You were influencing all these cultures so much so that it actually made it back to your mom's culture. And it it literally influenced into her seeing it. And to your point, you couldn't have explained it to her for her to understand it until it came from her culture. And then she wanted to learn more and engage, which is, again, it's beautiful.
It's awesome.
I'm going to close this out, but hopefully have a little bit of fun along the way. Okay. When they turned your life story into a movie, who would you want to play you on the big screen?
Ooh, who would play me? Good question. Okay. I think I've got the answer.
Okay.
But you said we're going to have fun with this. So
you
got to take this journey with me. You can laugh out loud if you want to. It this may be a little crazy. I think that if I were going to have a life story, the person that would play me would be Shaq.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The most unexpected person that you would probably think would be the response. Yeah, we all saw Shazam. Sorry, Shaq. It was terrible. But nonetheless, I think it would be Shaq. And I say that because movies are so subjective, right? Some people love Titanic. Some people didn't really love it. You know what I mean? Some people love him. Some people hate him. But here's the funny part. The movie part may stink, but the reality is that the real life of what Shaq has done has been absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. And if you've been following what he's been doing, you know, he didn't stink on the basketball court. You know, his real life was amazing. You know, he changed an era of basketball. You know, if you see what he's doing right now with NBA on TNT and, you know, the live show that they have after and before the games, the best show on TV for basketball. They're amazing, right? You take a look at, you know, kind of what he's done as a human being. You know, I've seen him. I just saw a video of Shaq, and he was engaging with a young lady, a girl, a youngster, may have been early teens, mid-teens, who was interviewing him. And he remember. She was like, you may not remember this, but we met a long time ago, and my brother ran over to you and wanted to get a signature, but you told him ladies first, and you did my signature, and it really changed him. He became a gentleman and this, that, and the other. And Shaq said, yeah, and I remember we made a bet. He did not say what the bet was, but the girl remembered. She goes, yeah, we did. And he goes, you did it. And he goes, I owe you. And he paid her the bet right there on the scene. Wow. And she was blown away. He looked like he gave her thousands of dollars right there, cash on the spot. He goes, we made a bet. I honored my word. You did what you said you were going to do. In my mind, I like to believe that she said that she wanted to become a broadcaster, interviewer type. And she was doing it. And he was able to witness that she did it. But the fact that he remembered that encounter blew her away, that he remembered it. Her face is like, you remember. And I mean, I've seen these videos of Shaq, a guy purchasing an engagement ring, you know what I mean? And Shaq pays for it, or, you know, a family buying them cars. So I say that although the movie may not be as fun, I promise if you follow the real life, it's so much more engaging. So I would use Shaq because we're having fun with it. And we know that Shaq may not be the best actor out there. He's not really going to win any Emmys or Oscars, or he's not going to be an EGOT winner. But definitely, you know, the fact that he does it and he just tries. You know what I mean? And sometimes you just got to try and have fun with it. You know what I mean? So Shaq, yeah, no Denzel, you know, no Michael B. Jordan for me, you know, no James Earl Jones. We're going straight to Shaq with it, and we're just going to have fun all the way along the way.
Well, the layup you missed is that he is definitely ultimate at transferring energy.
Yes, isn't he? That, yes.
Does that in spades. So I could definitely see how you got there. So what would be the song that you would play in your trailer?
Great question. And see, this song may not be known by many, but you've got to know the words. And if you know the words, then the song means so much more. I'll tell you the name of the song. The song is called Optimistic. It's by the Sounds of Blackness. Mm. And I think that if you live your life optimistically, if you choose to find the opportunity to be optimistic versus pessimistic in your, but still being realistic, I think that the combination of those three istics, as they say, mm-hmm. could really take you a long way. But I choose optimism. That's just me. But I also choose realism. So I do want to give you both.
So I'm a huge fan of stories. It's why I do the podcast. It's why I like to learn from people's unique experiences. But for you, if there were three people you could sit with, they could be with us, they could have passed, and hear their story firsthand, who would be your three?
Awesome question. I've been reading up on a young lady that I did not know at all, who goes by the name of Trisha Zorn. So let me give a little backstory to this. My nephew is autistic. I have, in having firsthand experience with an autistic child, my nephew, learned that autistic children are some of the most kindest children in the world. Mm-hmm. They have absolutely nothing but love in them, in a way that's almost viewed in some cases as a naivete, but it's just a pureness of just love. Again, my nephew's name is Fred. I call him Big Head Fred. I joke with him. And he loves it and hates it. I'm not Big Head Uncle Dante, but I love him. He's the best. And I mean, I'm biased, but yes, he's the best kid I've ever met. Just with passion, love, so on and so forth. And in meeting him and his friends and other folks with challenges, I've learned that, you know, their care and passion and wanting to be loved and beloved is unrivaled. So I started working with the Paralympics, okay, because I wanted to see the stories of folks overcoming. So that's what led to the research that I started this answer off with telling you that I did. I started reading about a woman named Trisha Zorn. She is a Paralympic Hall of Famer. She was inducted in 2012. You're going to be blown away when I tell you this, Matt. She's won 55 medals.
Wow.
55. 41 golds, 9 silvers, and 5 bronzes. 41 golds. What an amazing accomplishment. She was born without sight, and she's a swimmer. So to imagine swimming, you know, let alone, you know, walking into unfamiliar spaces, I'm sure that after swimming for so long, swimming becomes familiar, but you know, to walk in unfamiliar spaces or new surroundings blind can be very daunting. To be underwater or to be swimming in said areas could be daunting as well. So to imagine that she's won 55 mm-hmm. medals in this space, I would love to talk to her about her perseverance, about mm-hmm. her belief, like whatever made her even do it. You know, was this something that she pursued, mm-hmm. that her parents mm-hmm. put her in? I'd love to have conversation with Trisha. I just find her story to be fascinating. So Trisha Zorn is top on my list, followed by somebody who's no longer with us, a titan in technology, Steve Jobs. I'd want to have the conversation with Steve and find out if technology is gone, is he envisioned? Did he see some of this? Did he envision this? And what's the good and bad of technology from an insider's perspective? I'd love to have that conversation. I'd love to also learn what he had that was undone. I feel like, you know, folks who are visionaries often leave things when they leave us too soon, they often leave things undone. You know, I feel the same way about Martin Luther King. Like, I feel like they left things undone. And I'd love to hear what was in his brain that may have just never made its way out, that, you know, he kind of took with him, you know, on his next journey, but we never got the benefit of knowing. And so yeah. Steve Jobs would be number two for me. Number three is going to be two people in one, because I always, and I don't mean this offensively, I always deem them two in one. Mm-hmm. First names are all you need, Barack and Michelle. Oh yeah. Man, if I could sit down and talk with them, that would be, that would hopefully be one of those conversations that you set aside 30 minutes or an hour and it becomes an entire day and evening.
Yep.
Like yep. I would absolutely love to have a conversation with them. I find them to be riveting. Find Barack to be one of the cooler older dudes that I know that I don't know. He just seems so cool.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
So, you know, everything yep. that goes along with that, you know, kind of seeing his early stuff and realizing that it didn't start out that way. He wasn't cool at all. You know what I mean? So, you know, yep. just to have yeah. those conversations and insights from both of them, those would be my three. It'd be Trisha, it'd be Steve, and it'd be the combination of Barack and Michelle.
Yeah. I love all three. That it's a great examples of learning, understanding how you can take what worked in their journey, which may be different, and apply it to yours.
Yes.
So
yes.
Is there anything I didn't ask that you want to share or anything you want to ask me?
Actually, I've got a question for you.
Okay.
What's your story? So I'm going to turn what's your story around on you. And I'd like to know, what's the most memorable podcast moment that you've had on your journey with What's Your Journey? Or it could be elsewhere. It could be elsewhere if you were on another podcast. And that's on air and off. So what's been your good or bad?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's been your most memorable moments in this journey that you're taking right now?
So it's a great question, and one that I haven't really thought about. I'm gonna cheat and say two. Okay. One is when it launched, because that's where it went from being an idea into being a real thing and being public and being, okay, we're doing this. And I've had a lot of conversations with folks that are interested in podcasting, a lot of conversations with folks that are, you know, think their, you know, quote unquote calling is to have a podcast, or, you know, next step in their journey is to have a podcast. And I didn't realize what it would become. But the fact that when it went live, and, like, you know, you pull up your phone, it's in Apple Podcasts, it's on Spotify, et cetera. That was probably the most, like, memorable one. The second moment is the first episode of my second season where I interviewed my mom. And that one was, like, for the record books. And that was like, yes, I enjoy all these conversations. I enjoy learning from all of these great folks. But that one was like, okay, this is one that I'm going to share with the kids, and hopefully the kids' kids, and so on and so forth. So those are probably be the two that stand out the most.
I love that. I love the one of your mom. That's great. Like you said, that's legacy within your own family. You get to share mm-hmm. those stories. I always say that when, you know, none of us are promised tomorrow. And the thing that stinks is that so many people, you know, aren't able to share all the stories. Like, wow, if I had one more question, I would just ask. I wish I would have asked, you know what I mean? And it's like, you had that moment to ask them all and put them all out, you know, not only for yourself and for your future generations, but for the world to share in and kind of learn a little bit more about the story family. So no, that's awesome. I love them both. I love them both. Yeah. That's awesome.
Appreciate that. So before I let you go, if anybody wants to learn more about you, follow what you're up to, where should I send them?
Send them to LinkedIn. Look up Dante Simpson. I'm always on there. I always respond. You know, feel free to drop me a line, say, hey, I heard you on What's Your Story. You know, you were amazing. You were terrible. I love them all. Send them all my way. Listen, I've got nothing but good words for every single one. And drop me a line, you know, whether it's, hey, I want to say hi, or I want to know more. I'm always there. I'm always available and always happy to jump on and have a broader conversation. So,
great.
So yeah. And I'll even say this to the next generation of folks that are trying to figure out how to get into gaming, or if you're listening and your child is in college and they're trying to figure out a way in, and they're really great storytellers and they're looking for an intern, drop me a line. You know, we're not looking right this moment, but we can definitely add it to the list as well. So I like to say that somebody one day opened a door for me and created opportunity for me, and I look to do the same. So feel free to drop me with any of that, or just to say hi. I'd love to hear that as well. So
that's beautiful. Please. Beautiful. Well, again, I appreciate you taking the time and sharing your story with all of us. It's definitely been one that I've taken a lot from. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me today, Matt. I really appreciate it. Love the podcast. Love everything that you're doing. And I will personally continue to tune in. But this has been such an honor to spend this time with you today.
That was a really fun conversation with Dante. He just has a lot of energy. And as he referenced, his ability to transfer that energy is his superpower. And you definitely leave feeling that after speaking with him. But the three things I'll take away from our conversation are, one, that he actually went against what I think a lot of times people think of. You have to have a plan and you have to know where you're going. And if you don't, it's wasted time or wasted energy. And this idea of just keep walking. And even if you don't know where you're headed, just taking the step and ultimately knowing that it will reveal itself. And you may find many paths you go down that aren't the right path, but at least you have that information to identify the path you should be on when you get there. And I think that's something, just the idea of motion, the idea of movement and moving forward and having progress is just really important, even if it's not, quote unquote, aligned to some broader vision or broader journey that you've identified yet. The second thing, and he referenced this from a brand marketing perspective, but the idea of trying to create as many MTMs or moments that matter with people as possible, and that being the goal. And that's truly what you should be seeking to do. Again, aligned to your passion that he talked a lot about, but I think just having that as almost a personal KPI or OKR for yourself of if you're applying yourself in the right spaces is one that's just really, really great call out. And then lastly, he talked about the true meaning of success, being able to see the people that you won with go on and win on their own. And it's something that's come up in a lot of the conversations I had, this idea of the ripple effect and the impact you can have on someone that then goes and has an impact on someone else. And I think it's just really, it's really great to think about success through the lens of that shared success that goes on and fosters success in a different environment that you maybe aren't involved with, but because you were part of the original, you can see that ripple effect pay out. And I think that's just really, really key. Until next time, I encourage you, as always, to continue to share your story. It's so important, not only for you, but for others to hear your story. And if you have any feedback or any comments about any of the podcasts, feel free to reach out to me. You can reach me at all of the social channels at Matt E. Story, or you can go to my website, www.mattestory.com.